I'm Haley.
I'm John.
And I'm Will.
And we're from Crimson Comet, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the one you're listening to now, the opinions expressed are those of the individual host.
Check out other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in
3, 2, 1.
Hi, I'm Fabian Nicieza, co-creator of Deadpool, and you're listening to Audibly Exquisite, deliciousness for your ears. I have no idea what the hell that means or what kind of sick, twisted people came up with it, but it does sound audibly exquisite to me.
Going, everybody, and welcome to the Audibly
Exquisite Podcast, episode 91. I'm Mike Norn with
Peter Melnick.
And Peter Melnick, tell the good folks what we're all about.
What Audibly Exquisite is all about is we are your one-stop source for all things geek culture, be it movies, television, video games, comic books, you name it.
We're going to cover it.
And we are proudly brought to you by the Gunna Geek Podcast Network. Go to www.gunnageek.com and check out a plethora of geeky goodness. Now, Mike, you can also find us on social media, facebook.com/audiblyexquisite. You can find us on the Twitter machine, at the AE Podcast, myself, at Peter Melnick, yourself,
Buckaroo_Mike.
Let's see, you can also find us on Instagram, at
audiblyexquisite.
There we go. You can also find us on the worldwide interwebs at www.audiblyexquisite.com. And finally, you can support this show on Patreon at patreon.com/audiblyexquisite. For as low as $2 a month or as high as $50 a month, you can support this here fine program. And you can also help support what we do. So I think I said that twice, but yes. So we are currently joined on the line by the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion, the Fallen Angel, Christopher Daniels. Chris, how's it going today?
I'm doing great today, guys. Thanks for having me on the show, but let me correct you real quick. I am actually the Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Champion of the world. Nobody gets it on their first go-around, though, guys. So now that we're set, let's begin.
Chris, you are a humongous Marvel fan, much like I am, and this episode is going to be primarily Marvel discussed, although we do have one topic, but when we get to it, we get to it.
Sounds good, man. Let's talk. Let's talk Marvel. All things Marvel. Make mine Marvel.
You're a member of the Merry Marvel Marching Society as well, I'm assuming.
Born and raised. So yes.
So even before we get into that, who are some of your favorite characters, favorite creators, you know, people like that?
Well, the guys that actually got me into comic books, I mean, in the sense of that changed me from a kid that just had a bunch of books in a box underneath his bed to the guy that was collecting and trying to find entire runs. Those guys were Chris Claremont and John Byrne. The Dark Phoenix saga was definitely the thing that really got me interested in the Uncanny X-Men. I went back and tried to fill my collection with that stuff. And then also Marv Wolfman and George Perez with the new Teen Titans. Those were the two series, the first two series that I was interested in, like, trying to find back issues of. But, I mean, I've always been an X-Men guy. Wolverine's always been my favorite character. And that's always that's been my go-to guy for the past 30-plus years.
Yeah, I mean, myself, I'm a humongous X-Men fan as well. So, you know, what do you think, by the way, about the recent relaunch of the X-Men line?
So far, so good, man. I've really dug, the two series. I think the Mark Guggenheim series right now is really good stuff. I'm always interested to see the relaunches like this, just to see what direction it's going in. And so far, I'm really digging, Kitty Pryde sort of running her team of X-Men. I haven't had a chance to really read X-Men Blue as much, but I'm still digging all this stuff so far. And I like when these relaunches happen, just to see the direction everybody's going to go.
Now, how, in regards to the story, how long do you think it'll be until Peter and Kitty get back together?
That's a good question, man. I've always sort of wondered why that hadn't lasted. And I think part of it is just the idea of keeping conflict inside the books. So I don't know, man. I mean, I was sort of hoping that Kitty Pryde and Peter Quill were going to stick around for a good while. But I mean, obviously, you know, as the Guardians go back into space and he stays on Earth, it makes sense for them to sort of split up. But yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see where Kitty and Peter sort of go from here in the book. So, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, man.
It bums me out as a fellow Peter, you know, seeing Peter Quill lose Kitty, you know, just because. And I mean, this past weekend, I actually did my first cosplay ever, you know, and I did the Star-Lord cosplay. So, yeah, I mean, it bummed me out, you know, to no end. So,
but I mean, as a fellow Peter, you must be psyched to think that perhaps Colossus is going to get some Kitty. So, I mean, all the Peters are winning some.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely excited to see what happens. And I mean, Colossus, you know, a lot of the original characters are my personal favorites for the X-Men, you know, Nightcrawler and Colossus. So you can't go wrong. And just, again, seeing that relationship possibly, you know, spark once again, I can't wait. Now, speaking of Peters, by the way, recently a certain movie came out with a Peter Quill, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Now, Mike is actually getting up. I'm going to end up sending him a text message to let him know, because Mike has not seen the movie as of yet. He will be seeing it Saturday. Chris, what did you think of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2?
I really dug it, man. I was a big fan. I was interested to see how they were going to sort of play off of what happened in the first movie. And I really enjoyed it. I thought Dave Bautista really stole the show. Pretty much every scene he was in was hysterical. And it's funny, the day I went to see the movie, I listened to his podcast with Chris Jericho, and he made a comment that he was surprised. He thought that Drax was going to be more of a badass in the second movie, and James Gunn sort of turned Drax more in a comedic direction. But I thought it worked, man. I thought literally every scene he was in was hysterical. Dave Bautista really is just a shooting star as far as an actor goes. He's outstanding. And I literally laughed out loud just about every scene he was in.
Yeah, he knocked it out of the park 100%. And there's just, you know, certain things about that character that, you know, you wouldn't think would work as well. But like his delivery and everything just was, you know, a total home run, just fantastic stuff.
Yeah. And it's funny too, like I watched that everybody took away from it was the fact that they were split up for a good portion of the movie. But I felt like they were split up in a sense where, you know, there were stories going on both ends. And then finally, when they got back together, there was enough of that made me happy. Like once they got together at the end, you know, that was enough for me. So I wasn't too bummed out that a lot of the movie they were like on different ends of the galaxy.
Right. I mean, I'm wondering, you know, like for example, what did you think about the character of Baby Groot? Groot, you know, I didn't expect to enjoy the character as much. Like for some reason, parts of me were expecting it would be like, you know, they would shoehorn it in a little bit much, but the way they did it was absolutely perfect. I loved the character even more than I expected to, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I thought for sure too that by the end of the movie, he would have grown back to regular size Groot. But I mean, it was a great choice and I thought it was interesting. And I can certainly say my wife enjoyed Baby Groot more than anyone else in the movie. So, I mean, and they're basically printing money. Because if you could throw a rock in the air, it'll probably hit two Baby Groot dolls on the way down.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's smart, a little smart marketing there by Mr. James Gunn, so.
And it's funny because, you know, James got his start over at Troma, and look at him now. He's at, you know, his second number one movie in the country. It's absolutely, you know, mind-blowing, and he deserves it. He totally deserves every bit of his success for this.
Absolutely, and I'm very happy to hear, like, even before the movie came out, he announced that he was going to be doing the third Guardians of the Galaxy, which I think is a great sign because so often you get guys like, for example, when Jon Favreau did the Iron Man series and he stepped out of doing the third Iron Man, I was a little disappointed because I really enjoyed Jon's take on Iron Man and I wanted to see him sort of continue as long as Iron Man was, you know, having success. So, I mean, for James to decide up front that he was going to continue with the series, I think that's a good sign for the third movie and a good sign for fans of the franchise overall.
Absolutely. And, you know, James is the first person to have his own entire trilogy of films in the, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And that's a very rare thing. You know, the director of Captain America didn't direct Captain America 2, didn't direct Captain America 3. You know, same thing with, you know, Favreau, like you said, with Iron Man. And, it, you know, also with the Thor movies. Like, it's a cool thing, you know, seeing because he was that successful with, you know, giving his own take on the Guardians, which I, you know, again, I really appreciate. I love, you know, seeing these films the way they are.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I wasn't disappointed that, like, for example, Kenneth Branagh did such a good job on the first Thor, but I dug the second Thor without Kenneth being there. And then knowing how I'm going to mispronounce his name, I'm sure, but Taiki Waititi is going to do with Thor Ragnarok. Like, I'm interested to see how that all goes. But for me, knowing that James, the way the first movie went and how I enjoyed the second movie, I'm really looking forward to see how the third movie comes. So, I mean, that's it's a plus for Marvel Studios to get him to commit to all three films.
Right. Now, you know, a lot of speculation has been going on in regards to Guardians number 3. Spoilers, again, if you have not seen the movie, we'll give you 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You know, at the end when it's revealed that, you know, the Walkman was crushed and he ends up getting a Zune. Now, I have to ask, they're sitting right now. James Gunn said the soundtrack for Guardians 3 is going to be covering 1984 to 2014, which part of me is kind of bummed out that it's going with a little bit of the newer stuff. That's just me, because in my opinion, I love the Guardians 1 Awesome Mix Volume 1. I thought Volume 2 blew it out of the water, just a lot, you know, a lot more enjoyable for me, even, you know, than something I already enjoyed. What are some, you know, maybe picks you could see being utilized for Guardians 3?
Wow, probably, it would be funny to hear a little bit of the Hair Rock, like, if he threw Round and Round on there from Rat or something like that, that would be neat.
That would be amazing.
But, yeah, and I wonder how that's going to work, because so much of the first two had a lot to do with Peter's relationship with his mother and the music that she got him interested in. So, I mean, it's going to be a whole different thing for him to be listening to stuff from the more current era. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that's sort of, to me, it takes away from the whole mentality of why Peter is into the songs from the era that he listens to, you know? So, I mean, I'll wait and see. I'm not going to, you know, I reserve judgment on that, and I'll wait and see what James sort of puts in play.
Now, in regards to the film, also, this featured one of the best Stan Lee cameos. First off, what did you think about it and the utilization of the Watchers?
I thought it was great, man. I dug it, and I liked the idea that, you know, this little cameo from Stan sort of tied all the other cameos together. It almost made Stan a Watcher himself. And so I dug, as a Marvel fan, recognizing, you know, Watu and all the Watchers Rocket and Yondu are speeding through. You know, I thought that was a cool little throwback to everything that Stan has done in the Marvel movies. And, you know, hopefully Stan's around to do a couple more of these, you know, as the movies continue to get made.
Absolutely. 100%. I mean, you know, that's what I love about the Stan cameos. But I have to ask, if something ever did happen to Stan, knock on wood, it will never will, knock on wood, what would you see them utilizing? Because I know they would still do Stanios, as I like to call them. How do you think they would utilize them then? Like, you know, maybe like a little picture in the background or something like that?
Yeah, possibly. Like, I could see them doing something where, you know, characters walk in front of a poster of Stan or a statue of Stan or something, or who knows, man. I mean, in this day and age, you know, you look what they did in Rogue One for Peter Cushing. I could absolutely see them doing some sort of CGI Stan in some way, shape, or form. I mean, who knows? It depends. I mean, yeah, and I mean, you think about, and you know, and I'm sure Stan's going to live another 45 years anyway. So I mean, good God, by that time they could have invented the real life life model decoy of Stan, and he'll just continue to act long past past our deaths.
Well, we are both fellow agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so believe me, I think the idea of an LMD would be perfect to Stan.
Well, we can't talk about that because as level 7 agents, we really shouldn't talk about that over the air, so this maybe you edit this part out. So
now, also in regards to, you know, the movie, at the end they ended up hinting toward, or, you know, not hinting, but basically saying, hey, the character of Adam Warlock is coming.
I'm interested to see how that goes because so much of Adam Warlock had more to do with Thanos than the Guardians, and then for him to sort of be brought around, I'm interested to see how it goes. I mean, yeah, when you're making the films, obviously you want to try and be beholden to the books as much as possible, but at the same time you're making them for an audience that might not be familiar with the comics. So yeah, I can see James sort of taking free rein with the character of Adam Warlock. So I'm interested to see how that goes. But I mean, as a fan, again, you know, those appearances and that introduction certainly piqued my interest, and I'm sort of happy to see where it goes from here.
Now, in regards also, you know, overall, how do you feel about this movie in regards to the build towards Infinity War? Because, like, other than Adam Warlock, it really wasn't much of a film, you know, connecting the concept of the overall arc of the Infinity War, you know?
Yeah, and I was a little surprised that one of, you know, the stingers at the end, I was surprised none of those touched on Thanos at all. So, I mean, I'm interested to see how in the next couple of movies how they reintroduce Thanos so that we get to Infinity War. I mean, you've got Thor Ragnarok coming out, and I'm sure, I'm not sure what between Thor and what's going to come out between Thor and Avengers Infinity War. So, I mean, is it,
I want to say it's Black Panther, I think. Because they just wrapped up filming on that, which, like, blew my mind. I'm like, holy crap, they've been filming this entire time? Which shows...
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah, just shows how much on top of things Marvel, you know, Marvel Studios is compared to, you know, other companies.
Yeah, and I mean, like to me, I was expecting more of the other films. Like, for example, Ant-Man's stinger, one of them dealt with going towards Civil War, and then Doctor Strange's stinger, one of them went towards Ragnarok. So like I was surprised that none of the stingers went and sort of teased Guardians involvement in future films on the other side. But I mean, you know, again, I'm interested to see where it all goes, and I'm sure more will be explained once the third Thor comes out.
Now I have to ask, before Mike makes his grand return to the show, where does Guardians of the Galaxy, how does it compare to the first one, Guardians Volume 2 and the first one?
Oh, man. I thought it was comparable, man. Like, to me, it just felt like two different movies. You know, the first one, you get the introduction and you feel the camaraderie of the team sort of growing so that at the end, you've got this team. And then the second one, to me, it was more of a story of the team that's already been around and the interaction between them. So to me, I feel like side by side, they're both equally comparable. I mean, I enjoyed it for different reasons. I don't want to say one was better than the other. I think a lot of people's point of view is that one was better than two. But to me, I felt like they both stand side by side, honestly.
In a lot of ways, I'm the same because, yeah, it was, although I will say this, I preferred the soundtrack of 2 over 1, like I said earlier, and I've also, you know, I preferred the humor of 2 over 1 as well. Like, it was, you know, more so they found their footing. Although, like, one thing I heard repeatedly about Guardians 1 is it was lightning in a bottle, essentially. They caught lightning in a bottle. It was like a once-in-a-lifetime kind of thing, and it worked. And I think, in a lot of ways, yeah, they are on par with each other, you know, essentially. Now, in regards to, since Mike is back, welcome back, Mr. Norton.
Thank you.
Now, in regards to these movies, Chris, let's get your top five of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay, well, for me, as far like really my top five are going to be based on how I felt watching them the first time. And so like for me, and I mean, in no particular order as well, because it's hard to say better, worse to me. I'm just, you know, as a fan, I enjoy it all so much. But I know that like watching the first Iron Man, the first Thor, the first Guardians, like those three for me were like I went in expecting something and then getting so much more. Like, so for me, those three are in the top five. And then I'd have to say Civil War, definitely for me as a fan, seeing so many of the characters, so many threads that are introduced in different movies to sort of all come together to have that fight scene. For me, that 15, 20 minutes of that fight scene of Avengers versus Avengers, like that to me, like the fan in me at that point was doing backflips and blowing a trumpet and just screaming at the top of his lungs. And then, you know, I actually saw the very first, the Sam Raimi Spider-Man in Japan. And right. So that for me, you know, being able to go see Spider-Man sort of come to life, I know that doesn't really count as the Marvel Cinematic Universe in the way we look at it now, just because it was a Sony film. But I mean, for me, watching that first Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire and Willem Dafoe, I really enjoyed the hell out of that as well. So, I mean, that one, that holds a special place in my heart. And also, too, like an honorable mention to Deadpool. I mean, not the Marvel Cinematic Universe like we were speaking of. But I mean, to capture, for me, like these, the first instances of these films, the first introductions of the characters on film to me, were all so great. And I mean, like that, those up there, that's probably my top five. And I mean, that's, it's hard to not mention Ant-Man, and it's hard to, you know, not mention Doctor Strange, because I felt like they did such a great job of introducing the character into the film universe. You know, it's just a great, like Marvel Studios right now, they're really firing on all cylinders. They're getting great actors to play these characters. And I mean, you look at characters like Ant-Man and Doctor Strange, which when you look at it as a Marvel comic book fan, you sort of look at them as like, okay, well, they're not the top echelon of the characters. They're like sort of second level, I guess you could say. But I mean, for them to take those characters and give them their own film and the success and the to me, the hitting basically what were home runs with what you could arguably say are second tier characters, that to me is just outstanding. It just makes me excited about the possibilities of tying everyone together in a film like Civil War or Infinity War coming out.
Right. I mean, you know, in regards to my top five, I would have to go with, again, in no particular order, Guardians, obviously, Iron Man, Ant-Man, Guardians Volume 2. Like, it had that much of an effect. Again, you know, big Star-Lord fan over here, once again, so. And then the five spot, I would have to go, it's very interchangeable, by the way. So I'm agreeing 100% with what you said with Civil War, and Civil War gets that spot, although it's interchangeable a little bit with Winter Soldier, you know?
Sure, like, I think, to me, the only film franchise that Marvel has where all three movies are so wildly different was the Captain America series, and I feel like that's also the one series where each film got better as we went along. Like, I enjoyed Winter Soldier more than I enjoyed First Avenger, and then I enjoyed Civil War more than the previous two. And that's not a knock on the first two. That, to me, just says that they're really doing a bang-up job with Captain America and just making each film different, wildly different, completely different.
Now, Mike, yourself?
Well, I would go for my number five. I'm going to go 5-1.
Alrighty.
All right, so my number five would be Captain America 2, Winter Soldier. Number four would be Ant-Man. Number three would be Thor. Number two would be Iron Man. And number one would be Guardians 1. Until maybe Saturday, maybe that will change.
Now, you know, like I think also, where does for Chris, for yourself, where does the Netflix and the television series, you know, lie in all this for you?
I'm a big fan. I haven't had a chance to finish Iron Fist yet. I'm not. I'm only a couple, like maybe four episodes in on that, and that's just a scheduling thing for me. Yeah. But I really dug Jessica Jones.
Same here. Oh, yeah, that's
I literally blew through that in like 2 days. So, and honestly, to me, like the first Daredevil season, and then Jessica Jones, and then the second Daredevil season, those were the tops for me. I enjoyed Luke Cage. I was a little disappointed that, and again, his name I'm going to completely screw up, but Mr. Ali, his first name escapes me, but Cottonmouth. I was disappointed that he left the series when he did, and hopefully that changes somehow in some way, shape, or form through the magic of Marvel. But I'm interested to see where Defenders goes. I really enjoyed Kristen Ritter and Charlie Cox. Those guys are great, and their takes on the characters are awesome.
I've said in the past, I've said it on the show multiple times, but in my opinion, like, I love Guardians. Guardians is like, you know, the premier thing that Marvel Studios has put out, you know, on par with Iron Man. But Jessica Jones is hands down the best thing Marvel Studios has put out. That's like, it's a bold claim, and I've, you know, had people
argue. It's pretty bold. It is pretty bold.
But like, I was riveted by the whole series, you know, seeing somebody I love in the form of David Tennant turn out to be just an absolute vicious bastard, like just so evil. And it made me hate the doctor who goes Alonze and stuff like that. It made me hate somebody I love so much. And it's kudos to Marvel with their writing and with their, you know, direction of everything.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the performances of David Tennant and Kristen Ritter were over and above what I was expecting.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, yeah, that was a great series. And I remember as I was going through it that I couldn't wait to see the next one. And I really dug how it all ended up. So I'm looking forward to the second season of that or Defenders, really. That's going to come before the second season. And, you know, also the Punisher series, like how the Punisher sort of came into season two of Daredevil and took on a life of his own to the point where they added that to the schedule. Like, that to me is just a you know, it's almost like a Christmas present. You don't realize how great it is until all of a sudden, oh, well, let's make a series of this guy.
How do you feel about Bernthal's portrayal, by the way, compared to, you know, like we have Dolph Lundgren, we have
Thomas Jane,
and then we have guy from Punisher Warzone whose name escapes me right now.
Man. Ray Stevenson.
There we go.
I didn't get a chance to see Warzone. I really thought I was really I really dug the Thomas Jane Punisher, only in the sense that it sort of took the Garth Ennis story and tried to bring that to life.
Welcome back, Frank.
Yeah. I dug some of that. I mean, it wasn't my favorite film, obviously, but I appreciated the effort of trying to stick to that storyline and introducing those characters. And I dig Thomas Jane as an actor, but I think Berenthal really nailed it. And, you know, I was happy to see his portrayal. I thought it went very well. And I'm interested to see how the Punisher series goes and how they tie that into Defenders somehow. And, you know, the rest of the Netflix corner of the Marvel Universe.
If I'm being honest, Punisher Warzone is one of the most underrated Marvel films like that I've ever seen. And it's one of those, it's pretty much the director openly said, you know, she made the film and she was basically just taking Garth Ennis panels, you know, and, you know, with Steve Dillon and everything, and
right,
like, making them into, you know, that was the storyboards. Like, they literally took a Garth Ennis comic, threw it up on the big screen as it was, and it's bonkers, totally.
I'll have to
bonkers.
Give it a look then, man. I never went out of my way to go check it out, so I'll have to go look at it.
I know comedian Patton Oswalt has gone on record saying it's like one of his favorite Marvel films.
Really?
And, yeah.
Oh, wow. That's high praise, man. Patton knows his stuff, obviously. So, yeah, I'll have to take his recommendation and check it out.
Now, going back over to the Netflix stuff, this past week, around the time of Guardians, they released the trailer for The Defenders. Chris, what did you think of it?
I dug it, man. It's just a quick taste of all the characters involved. I really enjoyed the interplay between Luke and Danny. I thought it was a neat, just a couple scenes of the fight and that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, it's going to be cool to see how that all gets tied in and how these characters that have been established in their own series sort of come together.
Yeah, I mean, I like the I thought the trailer was a very good, you know, sampling of what we're going to be expecting. And to be completely honest, the utilization of Nirvana, you know, as the soundtrack over that, you know, trailer, it came so out of left field for me. Like, that was something I didn't expect, and it made it a memorable trailer. Just the interaction, the, you know, interplay between all the characters, it worked, you know?
I think Marvel's doing a great job as far as, like, tying songs to trailers. Like, you look at the Thor trailer with Immigrant Song 2. Like, I think I was in the theater when that came on for Guardians 2, and the place went nuts when they heard that song. I mean, and I'd seen that on, you know, I'd seen that trailer online, but I think that was the first time that I'd seen the Thor trailer in the movie theater. And when Immigrant Song started playing, like, people went nuts, dude. So, I mean, yeah, they're doing really good, you know, using popular music to sort of tie the characters in and get people psyched out for these films and television shows.
Personally, myself, my favorite one, utilization of a song in a trailer for anything that Marvel did, still has to be for Luke Cage, Mike Snow featuring Run the Jewels. As, like, a diehard Run the Jewels fan, oh my god, that was, like, the coolest thing. I still have that song stuck in my head, you know?
Yeah, yeah, they're really doing well, you know, figuring out ways to get people excited.
Now, you know, Mike, yourself, what did you think of the trailer?
For the Defenders, I'm excited for it. I mean, they're such all different characters, you know, Iron Fist, your Daredevil, Jessica Jones, and Luke, like, the only thing they got in common is that they're, you know, crime fighters. And they're such different personalities and fighting styles. I'm really excited to see what they're going to do together.
Now, I mean, you know, one thing about it that I really like is, you know, are they going to go with, you know, a group of heroes that bicker with each other? Or is it going to be like, you know, a Fantastic Four kind of thing where it's like a family unit? You know, we really don't know. Like, we get a little...
I sort of figure it's going to be a bickering style stuff to start anyway. I mean, just looking at the characters, especially Jessica and Luke, you know, being no nonsense street level, and then Jessica, just a hard ass like she is. I feel like they're going to start out with the you know, the butting of heads, you know, and then slowly but surely get to the point where they're a well-oiled machine. Like, that's just my take on it.
I'm really hoping, you know, with these, you know, Netflix and television adaptations of these characters, they can get it right. Because, you know, like, we recently just saw this past week the live-action version of what the Inhumans are going to look like. Now, Mike just made a face, like, I thought it looked okay. Mike, you have your thoughts on it. We'll get to that. But, Chris, what did you think of the first look at the live-action Inhumans?
I haven't seen the trailer yet. I've only seen the picture that came out on Entertainment Weekly, and I understand not to judge it from one photo. I've heard the negative about the costuming. I'm interested to see the actors. For specifically Ken Leung, I think is an outstanding actor, and I look forward to see how he plays Karnak. I'm not familiar with a lot of the other actors, My attitude towards everything Marvel, especially this sort of stuff in terms of the live action acting, whether it's the movies or the TV, is I'm going to give it a shot before I judge that stuff. I mean, so many people rush to judgment from an image or a trailer or something like that. And for me, I'd rather see the finished work and then judge it all together rather than decide, oh, this is going to not be any good, or, oh, this is going to be great. You know, I'm willing to give it that shot. I think Marvel has that cachet, that you know, that equity with me, where I'm going to give it a shot and give everything a look before I decide, oh, this is no good or whatever.
I absolutely agree. You know, like, you have to. It's a wait and see kind of thing. Like, I went into, you know, again, we're going to keep going back to this over and over, but, like, I went into Guardians, you know, still partially with, you know, like, hey, let's just see what happens. Hopefully, you know, I'll enjoy it, but I'm going to give it a chance. I'm going to give it a fair chance. And I left leaving it. I mean, loving it, not leaving it. Loving it, you know? So, I don't know. I mean, I personally, I dig the costumes for the Inhumans. I don't know why. It's just, like, it's going to be a TV show, obviously. So, you know, it's not going to be 100% perfect, but it works for what it is, you know?
And it's only a promotional still right now. So who knows? Maybe Black Bolt does get a mask with a little twirly thing on his head or whatever, you know?
And also, you know, you have to factor in also, like, the lighting for the photo. Mm. Maybe that wasn't that good. Because, like, you look at the guy who played Superman on Supergirl, and people were criticizing the hell out of that.
Oh, because he was too thin or something.
Yeah, something to that effect. And it's like, I saw a picture, you know, like... Or not picture, but I saw, you know, comments online after the appearance of the character, and people are like, wow, he's a really good Superman. Yeah. So it's a whole, yeah, it is wait and see, you know? And now, you know, Chris, drifting away from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but still being in Marvel land, FXX just announced that they're going to be getting a 10-episode animated Deadpool series written and executive produced by Donald Childish Gambino Glover. We're, you know, all three of us are, you know, big Deadpool fans, and, you know, with the success of the movie, how do you think a animated Deadpool series could do?
I don't know, man. It depends. I feel like the tough road that Donald Glover has sort of taken upon himself to sort of take this under his wing is that it's going to be compared to the film. And then as an animated series, how do you, unless it's like an Adult Swim type thing, how do you measure up to the live action film and the take that Ryan Reynolds has done? Like, I'm interested to see what happens and how they go with it. But certainly it's going to be an uphill battle with the success of Ryan Reynolds, the success of the film. It's going to be obviously compared. And I mean, I think it's going to have to be, obviously, it's going to have to be different than the film for its own sake, because otherwise it's just going to come off sort of like a cheap copy. Maybe the best avenue for Donald to sort of run is to, if he can somehow lean more towards the comic style of Jerry Duggan, what they're doing in the comic book now, rather than what Ryan Reynolds and what the filmmakers have made. Maybe that's their best hope of success. But I don't know, man. I mean, I'm not sure. Like, I sometimes feel like there's a lot of Deadpool in the comics themselves, and I hope that that's not a problem to come in terms of Deadpool the character on television/movies.
Right. Now, in regards to, you know, do you think they're going to do, like, do you think the series would benefit from original storylines, or do you think they should, you know, maybe use like one or two, you know, adaptations of, you know, a previous Deadpool story?
Well, I guess it depends on the writing staff. I mean, there's no doubt that Donald Glover is a fan, and so, you know, he's going to treat the character and the whole series with respect. You know, so maybe it's a matter of getting a comic guy or a guy that has written for Deadpool in the past to sort of lay out a plot. They may make 10 separate standalone episodes of just the character and a day in the life, or they may take this long overreaching arc of stories that cover 10 episodes. I mean, who knows, man? There's any sort of way that they can take this character and build a world just for the animated series itself.
Now, let's say if they were to do, like, you know, adaptations, any particular favorites? Myself, I'd love to see the Dead President storyline by Jerry and, you know, Posehn, you know, get, like, an animated form. I think that'd be perfect.
Yeah, I feel like the current stuff with him and Shikla wouldn't be a bad series as well. Just the interaction of him marrying her and his relationship with her, too. But I mean, yeah, like anything like that, anything that Jerry's done, I feel like Jerry's been the guy so far, as far as like that character. I feel like he's really dialed in and putting out some good stuff in the comic book series. So, I mean, he wouldn't be a bad guy to sort of lay out a direction for Donald and the FXX crew.
I mean, Jerry is one of the hardest working people at Marvel. He's got like 8,000 series going on right now. Like, he literally just started Guardians, you know, as well. So,
yeah, and I read the first issue of that, and I thought it was a real good starting point. And, you know, Aaron Cuter is just a great artist. So I'm looking forward to see how this series progresses.
Now, speaking of Deadpool, by the way, Fox just announced that they're going to be casting characters for the following New Mutants/X-Force members: Sunspot, Feral, and Shatterstar. guys, what do you think about, you know, these choices of characters to be included in Deadpool 2?
I think it's awesome.
Chris?
Yeah, I think it's cool. Yeah, I'm interested to see where they go. I'd love to see how they sort of tie that in with Deadpool, especially, you know, the with the origins of Deadpool and New Mutants, and then the upcoming New Mutants. I believe it's a television series that's being developed. So, I mean, I'm interested to see if there's going to be a tie-in, if they use the same actors, because they're both Fox properties. Do they sort of make a tie-in and sort of help the New Mutants television series by getting actors in that movie first? I mean, yeah, I mean, there's opportunities there to sort of tie the Fox Marvel universe together if they want. So I guess it just depends on what avenue they decide to travel.
Yeah, I mean, I like the idea that they're utilizing these characters. I think this is basically their backdoor way of getting some of these characters in, so when the New Mutants / X-Force movie comes out, it's an easy, you know, like, oh, I already know who these people are. I'm going to go see this movie now, you
it's
know?
It's like testing the waters. Like, you know, I heard a rumor that Howard the Duck might be in Guardians 2. So I'm still hoping that we get, you know, a Howard the Duck movie like we did, you know, back in the day, but better.
Mum is the word on Howard's appearance, by the way, in Guardians 2. We don't know, right, Chris?
I can neither confirm nor deny Howard the Duck being in Guardians 2. I can 100% tell you that he's not in Deadpool. So that I can just lay that to bed right now.
Now, speaking of things that got laid to bed, the promise of a Guillermo del Toro Hellboy movie has finally been put to rest. It will not be happening. However, and this is, you know, not Marvel, but Mike wanted to talk a lot about this, and, you know, we are all, as well, you know, Hellboy fans, so it's, you know, perfect thing to talk about.
Who doesn't like Hellboy?
Well, people, you know, that weren't born before Hellboy, although they might, you know, maybe consider it. You never know.
It's true.
So, but yeah, Hellboy is going to be rebooted as an R-rated film, and it's going to be featuring David Harbour of Stranger Things. Man, that guy's career is blowing up in the best ways possible. Now,
I think that's pretty neat, man. And I as much as I liked Guillermo del Toro's first two Hellboy films, it's interesting to see them sort of start with this clean slate, and it'll be interesting to see how David Harbour takes the character. When, you know, I'm a big Ron Perlman fan, and I dug the way that he did it. I was surprised when he was first cast, but certainly pleasantly surprised after watching the first two films. So,
aren't those the best casting choices, by the way? Like, you don't expect it to be as good as you want it to be, and then you're like, wow, that, like, I can't see that person any other way, essentially, too. Like, RDJ as, you know, Iron Man, like, I can't see anybody else other than him, to
and
be
look
honest.
At, well, look at
exactly. I mean, those were good choices, and I feel like the Ron Perlman as Hellboy was such a great, like, he turned it into his own thing, and I really dug it. So, I mean, I'm interested to see how it all goes. I'm not as big a Hellboy fan as many. I'm not as up to snuff on the books, but certainly the films were really good, and let's see where it goes. Have they announced a director for the film yet, or is it still just sort of in the, you know, just David Harbour is attached, and that's where we are?
They don't have an official director right now. It's just Mike Mignola is doing the writing for the movie. He's basically in charge of the whole thing. He said he's overseeing the movie. Yep.
And okay.
So, which is good, because, you know, he's the creator of Hellboy, so, you know, if anybody knows how to do a Hellboy movie, hopefully it's him.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people are bummed out that Perlman got out, but, you know, Perlman is, you know, getting a little older, and, you know, he himself even said they need to make this movie fast because, you know, I'm getting old. He said, I can't be jumping around on wires all day.
And now, Mike, you brought up a good point about the decision of casting, you know, someone like David Harbour.
Mm-hmm.
Why does that make sense in the sense of the character of Hellboy?
Okay, well, also, you know, Hellboy technically looks like he's in his 30s. That's, you know, in the comics, you know, he's like reverse dog years. Every year he ages a year. So essentially, you know, Hellboy's this young guy or in his early 30s. You know, depending on the timeline they do. They're probably going to do, you know, modern, I could see. Or a period piece. But anyway, yeah. So, you know, they needed a young guy. And David Harbour's only, like, I think 34, 35 years old. So, you know, and he's a good actor. And I was looking at him the other day and I said, he has a head like Hellboy. You know, that big that big blocky head and that big jaw, you know, like Hellboy has.
He's tailor-made for a Mignola film.
And I hope they do.
Well, I think a lot of it's going to have to do with the makeup, too. I mean, when you announced Ron Perlman, you know, you look at him physically in pictures of just Ron Perlman, And then when the makeup came out and you saw that, like, he literally was Hellboy. So, I mean, it's going to depend a lot on the makeup, I think. But, yeah, I think as far as, like, the acting, the choice of actors, like David Harbour, is not a bad choice at all.
Now, going away from the movies and stuff and going back to actual comic books, this past weekend was Free Comic Book Day 2017, and there are quite a few samplings of some pretty rad stuff out there to check out. Now, Marvel actually put out two free comic books for Free Comic Book Day. One was a split book between Secret Empire and Spectacular Spider-Man by friend of the show Chip Zdarsky, and also Guardians of the Galaxy. So, Chris, what did you think of the choices this year for Free Comic Book Day?
I really dug it. I dug the Secret Empire book. I'm a big fan of Andrea Sorrentino's art, and it's a very interesting story that they told. And I can't wait to see how it ties into Secret Empire overall. The whole Nick Spencer Captain America thing going on. I thought it was really well put together, and despite all of the negative feedback that it's gotten, I think it's a great story. I'm sticking with it to see how it ends, because I know when it ends, it's going to obviously come out good for us all. So and I don't want to give it away, but like the turn or the reveal at the end of that one story in the Free Comic Book Day book, it's really, really a turn, and I can't wait to see how they go, where they go from there. So I mean that book was great, and you also mentioned the Guardians of the Galaxy book, but that also had like a backup of Bendis's Defenders.
There we go. I forgot that.
And Marquez are going to do. Bendis is the man right now. I'm like, right now he's my favorite writer for Marvel. And as disappointed as I was to see him leave Guardians, I'm so excited to see how the Defenders series goes. And, I really dug that, the free comic book story of the Defenders as well. So, I mean, yeah, that was really good stuff.
I've always found it funny. I post on the comic book section of Reddit, and like they criticize Bendis for his Guardians run, but I've been reading it myself. I dig it. I think it's a fun story, like, you know, overall, you know? And I don't understand, you know, I guess it's like the point of, you know, like what you like. And it's, you know, just seeing the commentary from people about it, I'm like, no, this is actually pretty fun. I don't know what you're reading, you know? I like it. I think, you know, Bendis.
Yeah, I mean, it's very Bendis, though. I mean, Bendis has a style, and to me, you know, very dialogue heavy and very personal interaction heavy, which is fine with me. Like, he hits the action scenes well too, but I mean, to me, his rapid back and forth conversations, like, that to me is the stuff. And you know, I dug it on All New X-Men when he was writing it. I dug it in The Avengers when he was writing that. Jessica Jones is one of my favorite series that he's ever written, and the new series that he's done with her is great.
I've been wanting to check that out.
Yeah, like, it's really good, man. It's really good. And whoever didn't like Bendis's Guardians, that's fair. I mean, you know, like you said, like what you like. But I thought it was a great, in addition to making them, you know, very cosmic characters, he also brought them down to earth with their relationships between, you know, each other. So, yeah, I think that's a Bendis staple for me. And if you don't like that, okay, well, go pick up someone else's work, dude.
I have to ask, by the way, speaking of, you know, them coming to Earth and everything with the Grounded storyline, did you read any of the solo Guardians books that just happened, Star-Lord, Rocket, and whatnot?
I haven't read the new stuff yet. I mean, I've read the first couple issues of Star-Lord that Zdarsky's doing, and I dig that. I haven't had a chance to read the new Rocket series yet. I actually really liked the Gamora series that Nicole Perlman is her name, I think.
I believe
that she wrote. That's been really cool so far, and I dig the art on that. Now that they're back into space, it'll be interesting to see where all of those series go, or the new starting points. I know Rocket's just now restarting, and it'll be interesting to see if Star-Lord reboots somehow, or if Zdarsky, you know, sort of follows Star-Lord into space now that the whole crew is out there again.
Zdarsky just gets the character so well. Like, I dug the hell out of the Star-Lord Grounded series, and I thought, you know, I feel like he is one of the most underrated people working at Marvel. You know, his Doctor Strange one-shot he did for Monsters Unleashed was phenomenal. I loved Howard the Duck. As a big Howard the Duck fan, he got it. He understood what makes the character so great, you know? And, yeah, just Zdarsky is all aces over here from myself.
Yeah, I dig his work, man. I dig his work. So, I mean, I'm interested to see what he does next.
Now, speaking of, comics in general, yourself and Frankie Kazarian actually partnered up yet again with Art Baltazar and Franco for an Aw Yeah Comics release recently.
Yeah. We just released in February Aw Yeah Comics team-up number one. It was the sequel to Christopher Daniels and Kazarian Wrestle Aw Yeah Comics. I'm just thrilled to be able to work with Art and Franco again. To me, they're the Pixar of all ages comics. I mean, there's no one better. And, I'm just happy to be able to work with such talented guys. They're awesome to work with. And the book has gotten a lot of great response so far. So you can always get that at awyeahcomics.com. Or if you're a wrestling fan, you can get it at ROHWrestling.com or at live Ring of Honor wrestling events around the U.S., we're going to be in New York City on Friday for the War of the Worlds pay-per-view. And Frankie and I will be in the lobby there before the show, selling the comic book and generally inspiring people to be great like we are.
You guys are pretty damn great. I got to admit that. I mean, we're both very big fans, and we're also big fans of a friend of yours, this guy named Curryman, who personally, I think he's CM Punk because, I mean, CM, Curryman, Punk. I mean, you never see the two guys in the same place, by the way. Just saying.
I will go to my grave telling people that Samoa Joe is Curryman. I mean, it's obvious. They both have the same body type. But my understanding is right now, Curryman is still working at a Kinko's in Morioka. He's been paying off. He owes a lot of money because he was a famous drinker. I knew when he was in the States for that year, he ran up a lot of bar tabs and he skipped out on his bills a lot. So I'm sure he's still being sought by the authorities for payback for payments rendered.
And by
is there a reward for his whereabouts?
It's possible. I don't know what the extradition laws are for Japan. It's very possible, though. He could have changed his mask just to sort of blend in with the locals over there in Morioka. So who knows?
Now, real quick, by the way, going back over to the comic that you guys have done, I actually find it interesting. This is yet another moment where former comic book men people are on the same show. It's nice to know. I know you were on, I believe, season 4 of Comic Book Men. Season 4. Myself, I was on season 3 selling the infamous Punisher action figure, and Mike was on going for Green Lantern 76. So it's kind of nice to see, yet again, somehow we can't escape comic book men.
No.
Now, I have to ask, by the way, how did that come about?
I reached out to the producers and let them know that I was a wrestler and a comic book guy, and we're real happy that it all came together the way it did. The crew of the Stash were great hosts, and Frankie and I had a great time on the show with them.
Very cool. So now, once again, by the way, this weekend, this Friday, you will be wrestling and you'll be defending your title. Who are you going to be defending your title against?
Cody Rhodes and Jay Lethal in a three-way. It's the War of the Worlds tour where the stars of New Japan come over and interact with the Ring of Honor stars. So there's a lot of great matches, but that's the match that I'm most interested in, my world title match against two of the best guys in the business, Cody and Jay Lethal. And it's going to be a great show. So check it out on pay-per-view if you're a pay-per-view folk. Ring of Honor is going to put out another great show for you guys, and I'll be there.
I'm a diehard ROH fan myself, and I already know it's going to be a great show. So now, before we go, how can people get a hold of you, Chris, on social media?
You can follow me on Twitter at FAC Daniels. That's my main way to sort of keep in touch with my fans. My Facebook's connected to my Twitter, and my Instagram is also. But I'm a Twitter guy first and foremost. I only have the attention span for 140 characters. So, I mean, really, that's the best way to listen. But, I mean, you can also follow my exploits at ROHwrestling.com because I'm 100% exclusive to ROH now. And that's basically it, man. I try and keep my fans informed of the goings on my Twitter. And that's the best way to do it.
Very cool. And once again, it is an absolute pleasure being able to have you on. This is like, you're one of my all-time favorite wrestlers, like legit. And just, being able to, talk chew the fat with you about Marvel, just, man, this ruled. I'll be completely honest. This ruled. Mike.
Well, cool, man. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I know. Also, we have to say once again, because it's the truth, you have no idea how much, wrestling fans like myself and Mike, we're happy to see you finally have the title. You freaking deserve it more than anybody, really, like big time.
Thanks very much, man. I appreciate that. And I'm going to continue to defend that belt as much as I can and hold on to it as long as I can. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
So now before we go, we're going to go through our social media plug skis again. How can we find us? How can people find us? We can go on Facebook.com/Audibly.
Exquisite.
Give us a like ski on there. You can find us on Twitter at the AE Podcast. Myself at Peter Melnick. Yourself.
Buckaroo_Mike.
You can find us on the worldwide interwebs at www.audiblyexquisite.com. You can find us on Instagram at
the Audibly Exquisite.
At Audibly Exquisite. There we go. And finally, support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/audiblyexquisite. And through a tiered reward program, you'll be able to help support the show for as little as $2 a month to as high as $50 a month. A little bit of fitty. So, for Peter Melnick, I'm Peter Melnick. Chris?
I'm Chris Daniels.
And for Mike Noren, I'm Mike Noren.
Have an audibly
exquisite week. Thank you.